Hey, everybody. Welcome to another great episode of the OIG Roundtable. Very excited to talk about our topic this week. And I've got my partners in crime, a retired assistant special agent in charge, Wade McFall, from the LA field office, now a manager on our SAU investigative team, and Mac Pachansky, retired executive from HHS OIG and the retired Northeast UPIC director. And now I believe we're calling it chapter three of the life and times of Mac Pachansky. So, you know, interestingly, the other day I was actually at an OIG agent's retirement party, and I had a current OIG agent that I know come up to me and say he does not spend a lot of time on LinkedIn, but he follows all of the advice stuff, follows us, watches the podcasts, watches the LinkedIn Live. And he said, I really appreciate the perspective that you give on these. It's really helped me with my job. So I appreciate that. And we've gotten some feedback from some of our SIU clients and just people in general. So we do appreciate people tuning into this weekly podcast and finding some medicinal value to what we're talking about. So in that same vein, we're going to go back and talk a little bit more about SIU things and operations. You know, interestingly enough, we received an article that was put out by Arkansas Blue. The SIU director over there is a lady by the name of Debbie Gunter. I don't know her. I think Jean Marie might know her through LinkedIn, but she is the SIU director. And she put up a little bit of a story for their newsletter that was published online, talking about some of the successes that their SIU have found. And, you know, we've read it. We were really interested in it afterwards. And the highlight of the article was that for a period from 2016 to 2018, a three-year period, they had 5,974 fraud reports that came through their SIU. Now, what we don't know from this article, and Debbie, we'd love to talk to you about this, is of the 5,974, how many of them were proactive? How many of them were reactive? You know, really kind of what was that mix? We don't know. We just know that the SIU ingested 5,974 fraud complaints. We don't know how many of them were opened. We don't know how many of them were closed. So these are just numbers. What was interesting is that when you look at this, it's an average of 1,991 complaints a year. This is not a huge plan. They have five analysts and six investigators. And we're going to talk about that mix because that was something that was interesting to us. But the fact that they have that many complaints coming in, that's an average of 331 fraud complaints per investigator per year. Now, again, these are just raw numbers. We haven't spoken to Debbie. We don't know how many of those became credible allegations of fraud, but someone has to deal with them. And, you know, ultimately, those are big numbers. And even if a large number of those don't result in anything, the thing that stood out to us was the fact that they have an almost one-to-one ratio, six investigators and five analysts. And so, Matt, I want to start with you because that's an important metric when we looked at it, right? When we do a lot of our process improvement stuff, and I want to talk about one of the successes we're having with one of our clients, but having that many analysts to vet cases, to do some preliminary work and determine whether or not that case needs to be moved on to an investigator, that really does help with things like ROI, vetting, but it also helps with determining where a case should be and when it should be.
Right. Yeah. The upfront vetting or triaging of the cases is or of leads or complaints is absolutely essential to the success of an SIU, both in ROI and in just effectiveness and efficiency. Having five analysts or a team of analysts to be able to look at the stuff coming in, triage it, use internal criteria to decide this should be done, sent to the investigators, this should be sent out, this should be closed, this should be sent to the back to the provider for education or whatever type of bucket you want to put them in. Having the team available to do that makes it so much easier for the investigators to then take the high priority, high impact cases that are, you know, that are affecting the program vulnerabilities and taking those to fruition much easier than having to slough through 5,000 complaints to come up with maybe the 10% of them that are actually worthwhile moving forward. And, you know, we've had a lot of success in training to that in terms of how to discern what criteria to use, how to find that in the facts of the complaint or in the data, and then what to do with it based on that. And, you know, with one particular client, we had a nurse investigator assigned to that role as their triage person, going through each of their leads and then deciding which bucket it should go in, and then working with the investigators on why it was sent there, documenting the cases and so forth, to the point where that client now has created a triage team similar to what is in Arkansas, with a team lead and three or four investigators, that their role is to look at complaints, look at data, look at the data models that are generating leads, and then vetting those to the correct resolution.
And we're having great success with one of our clients right now, where we've got somebody, right, who spent a long time at the Northeast UPIC in this space, vetting complaints and triaging and helping to train. And we've got someone doing that 20, 30 hours a week for one of our clients, and kind of helping with a combination of burn down of existing cases, helping to set some criteria for new cases. And that really does help with ROI, because you're not having an investigator at a higher salary spend their time looking at cases, vetting cases, trying to figure out what the right ones are. You've got, you know, theoretically a lower resource doing a lot of that work, and it's working out well. This one client is in about 6 or 9 states, I believe, in the Medicaid space, and they're a growing, they're a very quickly growing plan, and they need, like, you need to have that recalibration. I mean, you can't be successful without having the right people in there.
Correct. And they have to be looking at the right cases, and this allows them to do that. And you can't minimize the importance of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's things like looking at, you know, while we didn't at Office Investigation spend a lot of time on the work plan, it's looking at work plans. It's looking at, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, it's looking at the funny papers, right? The press releases that come out. It's understanding what are the fraud schemes that are out there. It's looking at, you know, what is the SIU identifying? What are analytics? It's looking at probably a half a dozen different internal, external metrics, and what are the trends out there in the industry that we're seeing from an FWA space, and staying abreast of those things, because those are the things that are going to be the cases of tomorrow. The frauds of today become the cases of tomorrow, because no one reinvents the wheel. So having someone who can just be dedicated to doing that, whether you call them an analyst or an intake person or whatever, is an important piece. And we know from this one client, they've increased the number of people doing this vetting. You know, they went from essentially nothing to, I think it's right, it's 2 or 3 people.
It's at least 3 people plus a team lead. And one of the things they're also doing is they're looking at their internal data to see where's the spend, where's the big money for these multiple plans that they have. Where are they spending the money? So let's focus our resources there.
Right. Yeah, it's an important piece, and it works the ROI. So wait, ROI, you know, when you read articles in the government space about OIG and ROI and the OIG, we see some really big numbers, and I've had some conversations with plans about, you know, they ask questions about how do we get to those numbers? And those numbers are a little misleading for everybody other than the OIG, right? And so let's talk a little about, like, you know, what's that average rate of return, and why is it unique?
Yeah, and the number seemed to change as it would every year because of, you know, you might have one huge case that comes in that's going to kind of change the overall numbers, but it varied a lot. But I think the latest one for 2024, they said it was like a 10-to-1 return ratio, which is for every dollar that the government invests in the OIG returns $10. So that's impressive. Those are good numbers, but you can't really compare it side by side with a SIU team, because of one, for just the resources that go into the OIG, but also the OIG deals with, you know, civil cases that you may be able to get, like, treble damages. So if it's a $1 million case, you might end up getting $3 million back. So those numbers really kind of are skewed, I guess, by the mechanics of what the OIG does and basically what the SIU does not have the ability to do. But I would also argue that there's some things that the OIG invests a lot of resources in that doesn't affect that 10 to 1 ROI. And that's because the Office of Investigations, most of the investigators, although civil cases are very much part of their docket, but most criminal investigators with the OIG try to focus on criminal cases, which means putting the bad guys in jail and not necessarily having them repay the money. So a lot of resources go into, you know, undercover surveillance, those types of things, trying to get a criminal conviction or, you know, criminal complaint filed, which is not really going to affect the ROI, that 10 to 1 ROI. But again, SIUs don't really have the same opportunities to get those numbers back. But even if they do the math, and you can simplify it and make it a very simple mathematical equation, and I think all SIUs should do this, because even if you get a 2-to-1 ratio, that's good. For every dollar that the insurance company invests in the SIU, you return $2. The math is there, and it's still good, even if it's a 1-to-1.5. As long as it's more than what's being invested, it's a win. It's a check in the win column. So I think it's important for SIUs to use those numbers in articles like the one we're referring to, where it comes out in the insurance company's newsletter. I think it's important to have those numbers out there so people know what the SIU is doing. I think it's also important for those articles to maybe give like a nod to the type of cases they're seeing, so not only the members know what to look for, but the providers might, you know, be like, hey, they're looking at this genetic testing, you know, I better, you know, whatever the example might be. But it kind of puts them on notice on what the SIU is looking at and looking for. So I think those articles are very important. It kind of reminds me of the SMPs that we used to deal with, this senior Medicare patrols. I think it's very important to have the members, and in this case it would be, that case was Medicare beneficiaries, this case it would be members, to know what's going on behind the scenes with the SIU or with the OIG, so they know that, you know, someone is out there looking, trying to protect those dollars, trying to protect the program, so that the members or the Medicare beneficiaries, you know, someone's looking out for the dollar behind them, so that the program can continue on and not, you know, go broke, basically.
Yeah, the ROI challenge is always going to be out there in the SIU space, and I think it is super important to realize that the OIG's ROI is unique, because there's things like civil cases where there's double damages, trebles, CMPs where there's the prospect of double damages and settlements and things of that sort. The OIG is, you know, also calculating in fines and all of that other stuff, and that becomes part of that metric. But, you know, this does lend itself, Wade, and I want to give you kind of the final word on this, is this whole premise of why it is important to communicate with law enforcement early and often. Because if you are working on a case and you're spending a lot of time on it and then refer it to law enforcement for it to then sit for a long time and then come back, you know, you've got some front end costs that will impact your ROI because you've made a referral. And so that's why having those conversations, right, it's important to do those early, because if you do it early and you can get Mufuku interested in a case that they may take earlier than sooner than later, you are putting yourself in a position where your ROI isn't negatively impacted by working on a case that then results in no one wanting it or it being too late to the game, opposed to an early set of interaction where you can identify whether or not someone is interested or not and then take action as you see appropriate.
Yeah, there's definitely a fine line. I mean, you have to do a certain amount of work, the SIU does, in order to have the, whether it be the Mufuku or whatever law enforcement, for them to show interest in it, there has to be a certain amount of facts, you know, gained, so that it's something they realize that it's something that there may be a case there that they want to pursue. So there has to be a certain amount of resources invested prior to making that referral. But you're exactly right. You don't want to work it up like it's not going to be referred. Invest all those resources, because as far as ROI is concerned, at that point of the referral, it's basically cut off. You're not at that point. You're, and it may come back to you. You may be able to work it and get some money. But as far as the ROI, getting some actual return, when you refer that off to law enforcement, I mean, theoretically, it's done. You're cutting your losses. You're saying, we're not going to pursue this recovery. We're going to, and in the big picture, it's the right thing to do. It's a good move, because it's now it's being investigated by a law enforcement agency or entity that has much more resources and more ability to work it in a different way that an SIU really can't, when you have, you know, a lot of people working remote, working from home, and they just don't have the law enforcement ability. So in the big picture, it's great, because you're throwing more resources at it. But as far as the SIU's ROI, that's like the end of the game. So you want to kind of toe that fine line of having enough information to make it appealing to the law enforcement agency, but you don't want to keep investing money into the case knowing that you may refer it and you will get $0 back.
Right.
And that brings up a couple of points. One is, going back to the original vetting, triaging, one of those buckets could be, this is a good potential fraud case. Let's put it into the bucket of potential referral and work it that way, where the resources are used to make that referral as quickly as possible, saving the resources. And the other is, after the fact, after the referral, having the ongoing relationship with law enforcement to say, hey, we refer this to you. We'd like to do a prepay on this person or suspend them. Will that compromise your investigation? Therefore, protecting the plan and perhaps even getting some ROI on cases you've referred to law enforcement.
Well, and that gets to kind of that final point, Matt, which is this whole discussion with law enforcement. When you were at the Northeast UPIC, I know I jokingly say this, but I saw you more in my office in New Jersey for meetings about cases than I saw some of my coworkers. Because, you know, you were doing the right thing, which was early and often, to make these assessments. Is the UPIC going to expend resources on something that we have an interest in, or are we going to tell you, no, we're not interested in that case, and you go on and do whatever you're going to do, treat it as an overpayment, return it to the MAC, close it out, or what have you. That those conversations need to happen frequently. Right. Because things change on a dime. What, you know, if you've got somebody who's in a leadership position at a FUCU or a law enforcement organization, and they weren't interested in a certain kind of case, and you're working it, maybe a month later they've changed leadership or they've changed priorities or what have you. So those kind of conversations need to constantly happen. And while I think from the law enforcement perspective they may get annoying, you know, if you have a case where they're not interested in it, maybe they're not interested in it this month, but some fact has come up that makes them interested in it the next month. So you've got to be able to visit and revisit a lot of these issues on an ongoing basis to ensure that your ROI stays you know, where it should be. I saw some recent stuff where some plans were incorporating into their ROI. You know, they've shut down a lot of offices. It's a lot of virtual offices. And so they were attributing costs to the SIU, costs for overhead in the office, you know, the desk, the square footage, and that, you know, they're now in a virtual space. So that ROI has, in theory, there's a potential increase in ROI because you've reduced your overhead. So you're not having to spend as much money, you know, for things. But what I would love to see are plans shift that expense that they were already accounting for to things like training and education and things of that sort, because that money was already spent. Let's just maybe just spend it on the people. And your ROI will continue to be there. So it was a short article. I know, you know, get back to this Arkansas. It was a very short article, but there was a lot there to unpack. It's really impressive. We're hoping that we can have some conversations with Debbie Gunter at Arkansas Blue Cross in the coming weeks, talk to her a little bit more about this and how she's able to get her plan to be this operationally sound. Particularly when you're not a huge plan to begin with. You do have the support of obviously the Blues and the NAB and things of that sort, but you still got to do your thing. So it was impressive work. So hopefully more to come on that conversation. So, you know, we'll see. Again, as always, everybody, thanks for tuning in. We appreciate it. We've got a bunch of LinkedIn Lives coming out soon, next couple, 3 months. We've got a good schedule up on our sites. And please sign up for our newsletter on our website. Join us on LinkedIn. We've cracked, I think, 34 or 35,000 followers. Super happy about that. Our content gets, when we have our followers, you get that content out on LinkedIn, our newsletter and things of that sort. So as always, we thank you for joining us and we'll see you on the next OIG Roundtable.
Thank you.
Thank you all.